So tonight I'd like to talk about these three aspects of meditation, kind of these fundamental pieces as we start to learn. So first is that steady attention, you know, learning how to have that unwavering contact with the moment. This is one of the harder things to have because we often struggle with it. We have to learn to have that finesse with that contact. Now, equally important is the sense of a friendly attention, an attention that's not contracted, that's not tense, that's not judgmental. This is also very important. And the final aspect is the seeing through our thoughts. This is what we've talked about in some of the questions and answers around our projection on the world and learning to see that, as a projection, to not start to learn the difference between our ideas of something and the actual experience of that thing. Doesn't matter if it's our sound, a breath, or a sense of us, of who we are, who someone else is. So let's start with that steady attention. And learning to cultivate that steadiness, that one-pointedness. So we often start with one object of attention. Okay, that just helps us to train our minds, to train our attention. It doesn't really matter what it is. Some techniques, some teachers pick one thing, some teachers take another thing. And so I mention this because we have room to really fine-tune what works for you. Because some of us, when we focus on our breath, it actually may trigger trauma, for example. We have unresolved trauma. Sometimes connecting with body sensations kicks that up in a certain way. So learning to shift to sound still teaches us how to have that steadiness of attention without having all this other stuff get kicked up. So we're looking for some object, a single object that allows us to steady our attention, that also invites a quality of settling, of collectedness, of also calm. And again, this is an initial training. So we are getting a sense of the technique, learning some of the fundamental processes. And we learn to apply that to other areas, other objects of attention that may be a little bit more challenging. Now, I've said that this is kind of the beginning stage, but sometimes we're at the beginning stage after 20 years of practice. You know, sometimes our minds are struggling. We're having just a bad day or a lot of stress in our lives, and we have to learn to find that steadiness of attention. And that's what we learn to gauge, okay, what's needed right here in this meditation based on my mind. And the more experience we have, more we're able to adjust that accordingly. So this is developing this firmness of attention, this steadiness of attention. This does take a lot of patience, a lot of self-compassion, because it's easy to be judgmental of yourself when you get lost in thought, when you get distracted, because the mind doesn't naturally just stay steady. And the reason is we develop that steadiness, it's almost like developing the power of a flashlight to start to see through the fog. Okay, the fog is the unconscious, it's the powers of delusion. And so learning to see through that, we almost need a stronger candle power. Isn't that the name of that? How bright some light is. And as we develop that concentration, we also feel that inherent calm, that sense of settledness and peace, really. Sometimes it feels like time starts to fade. There's a sense of timelessness that happens in the midst of that. We want to watch our attention to relaxation ratio. Okay, so the more we can really get almost enamored with those states, really want those states, and use a lot of tension to try to get back to those states, that's actually quite counterproductive. We're going to find that level of ease with that. I remember when I was early in my practice, when I was going on retreat and having a tendency to have a lot of effort, and just effort to sit still, to not move, and also to relax. So it sounds kind of funny to have effort in relaxing, but I found a way to effort that. And being kind of not very flexible, you know, sitting cross-legged in the meditation hall, just feeling the legs burn and get really tight. And I would relax with it. And after the 40-minute bell would ring, I would get up and move and go walking meditation. And I would keep working with that, but it was very intense. until one moment I heard the bell and I noticed fear come up with that bell. And right then I realized, oh, I'm not practicing in the right way. I'm starting to condition fear with the meditation because I'm striving too hard. I'm trying to force my way through that. So I say this just to balance that steadiness of attention has to be with wise, with what we call wise effort. It has to have a quality of softness to it, of relaxation. This technique or this tradition comes from Buddhism. And there's a story in the Buddhist time when he was watching someone playing the lute, playing like an early guitar. And he said, okay, look how the string has to be tuned just right. If it's too tight, it won't sound right. If it's too slack, it won't sound right. It has to be right in that right pitch. And that's the effort we learn to find when we practice. What's the right amount of effort to connect with the breath, connect with sound, but not so much that we're getting tight. And the sense of effort is, I think for most people, it's progressive or it's a process. That as we practice, we start to learn deeper and deeper ways to have less effort and still really connect. Just like someone who's a master at something, they might just make a little movement and it's just the right movement. You know, watching a great skier or a great athlete, you just make a slight movement and it's perfect. While a beginner is like thrashing around all over the place, trying to get down the hill. And so we're kind of at that stage that we tend to use a lot of effort because that's all we know. But I know for myself, over the years of practice, I've discovered more and more ways to have that, the effortless effort, really releasing, relaxing into the moment. So just to hold that the effort you use right now will be different than the effort that in a year, or even at the end of this 6-week class. So steady attention, learning how that one point of focus. Now that one point of focus, I'm going to just mention it right here, that's one expression of the practice, that we can have just this one thing I'm focusing on, the exclusion of everything else. We can also, just like taking a flashlight from pointing at one thing, we can open it to see a much wider range. And our practice, the class will actually move that direction as well to learn how to have that one point of focus, but also that much broader focus. It's like right here in this room, those with me sitting here and those online, pick one thing out in the room and just focus on it to the exclusion of everything else. Like I'm focusing on that little tape there on the floor. So everything else I let go of except that one experience. Okay, so can I relax, just receive that? Not straining too much. If I start to get distracted, coming back, that's what strengthens that mindfulness. And now, let your gaze kind of open up to include everything in the room. And you can still see that one object, but you also see everything else. Both are mindfulness, both are meditative practices. And so we learn to narrow focus and also broaden it. Sometimes we do that intentionally. Sometimes we do it based on what's arising. And just to point that out, that it's not a one-pointed breath meditation. It's really experiencing this whole aspect of living, the breath, the sensations, emotions, even thoughts. We have to learn to start somewhere. Often starting with that steadiness of attention is really underdeveloped. Okay, steady attention. The next aspect is that steady attention needs to be tempered or shaped by a compassionate quality. Because we can take, like, I have a dog at home, and he can spend a lot of time sitting quietly, but he's focusing to see if the squirrel's going to come out or the bunny. He just focused on that one spot. He seems like he's very attentive, he's very mindful, but it's with its agenda, right? So we learn how to have a different quality of focus that's really, it drops the normal agenda making that we have. You're allowing the moment to be just how it is. This is really a radical piece here, because usually we see in order to judge, in order to fix. Even see that, say, I like that, I don't like that. But actually let all that fade So you're just noticing it with a very clear way, clear mind, a very welcoming mind. What this does is allows our attention now to see much more fully. Because if you walk into a room and let's say you focus on what's not, what you don't like in the room, you stop seeing everything else. You just focus on that. Or you walk into the room and you focus on what you really like, you stop seeing everything else. But if you can learn to see it with a balance of attention, then you start to see this, you start to see things you had never would have known were there. And so same too with our own experience, with our own breath, with our own body, with our emotions, with our inner experience. That there's these elements that start to show themselves as we start to let go of that normal fixing, judging mind. So it's really helpful to say, this is okay, what's here. Even though it may not be my preference, may not be something I appreciate or I'm struggling with, or something I really like, you know, can I just have that quality of just seeing it for its own sake? So to do this, we often have to step back our reactivity, our need to act, to do something with. But part of this is working with non-resistance, you know, allowing experience to be felt without that normal resistance. We can resist something that's pleasant. We can resist it going away. We can resist something that's unpleasant, trying to make it stop. And this was a piece that I really worked with a lot, especially in my very early years as a meditator, is that concept of resistance times experience equals suffering. So I can have an experience like someone mentioned, like having the mask on and heat, and we can resist that experience and really, as he said, amplify the difficulty, we amplify the experience. And if we instead don't resist that experience, then we reduce the amount of suffering that we have. So this is something that I really took on because I was going through a very difficult breakup of a relationship back in, you know, over 20 years ago, and starting to hear the Dharma, I thought, well, even this emotional pain I'm suffering with, part of that is my resistance to it. If I can relax my resistance to it, there'll be less subjective suffering. And so that was a theme in my practice for, continues to be. And one year I was doing a retreat and I had a kidney stone attack. But I didn't know it was a kidney stone. I thought it was like a really bad gas bubble or something. So I was practicing with it, trying to feel it, the experience of it, having non-resistance to it. You know, I wasn't sitting in the hall meditating. I was kind of writhing in my room, trying to find a comfortable position until finally, after 3 days, I went to the ER, got some morphine, and I suddenly felt much better. So I just get a sense of my striving stoic initial stance in meditation. So I thought I learned, though, a lot about how to work with difficulty and intensity and relax with it. I thought the kidney stone resolved and everything was good. But then about a month later, that kidney stone pain came back just in an instant. And I was very surprised to notice there's the pain, very intense. But with that pain came all my fear of it, all that past experience, how I could see right there how that amplified that experience to something that felt very unmanageable. The pain, of course, is very intense, but my mind made it much more so. And that was a huge lesson to realize, oh, this is what that teacher meant. Resistance times experience equals suffering. So use meditation as a way to practice that. When you feel the urge to itch or to shift, practice, can I relax with that? Can I relax with that experience to some degree? What does that start to teach you? First, we have things in our life which are very overwhelming and difficult. And we have other strategies we need to use. So practice in these small ways, these small irritations, starts to teach us the possibility to work with the bigger ones. It starts to pave that way. So non-resistance, relaxing emotionally, physically, mentally, with whatever is arising. And to your capacity. You're going to have many things which are harder, too hard to relax with. Practicing in easy ways starts to teach us those bigger ways. So the sense of compassionate, non-judgmental, neutral attention. The third one is seeing through thought, seeing through our ideas, our concepts. So I tend to use thought as a huge umbrella term, including, you know, beliefs, thoughts, concepts, labels, anything that has a cognitive aspect to it. And this practice isn't about, it's not an anti-thought meditation or anti-thought practice. It's really learning how to see thought in its proper role. Because usually thought is kind of the forefront of how we interface with the world. You know, Descartes, I think, therefore I am. It's like that. That's kind of the way we default to seeing the world, is through our minds, our story around. It has its purpose, right? Each one of us has used our thoughts to tremendous benefit for ourselves and others, to find our way through life. And we're going to learn a different way of relating to the world, to the moment also. So I think you'll find that you start to free up the constriction of thought without losing any of its benefit. So we talked about that labeling with the question of hearing and sound and seeing how to label, release that. That's your question of releasing thought, the idea around something. And sometimes those labels have a lot of baggage, have a lot of momentum behind them. So even those ones, learning to free the moment from those thoughts. And so often our label or impression of something isn't accurate. Have you ever noticed that? That you see a friend who's kind of grimacing at you and you think, oh, wow, they're really upset at me. And maybe you talk to them and realize they just, their stomach is upset. There's something else that's bothering them. And we misinterpret that. So meditation has this really profound gift of learning to recognize our thoughts versus the actual experience. To start to tease those apart. There's a short poem by Samuel Green that everything we see carries the burden of what we know until we let it be itself again. Everything we see carries the burden of what we know until we let it be itself again. Walking the yard with coffee cooling in my hand, I stop at a single seed of hawksbeard balanced on a blade of grass. Except for paying attention, what else is continual prayer? So Samuel Green, his phrase here, that everything we see carries the burden of what we know until we let it be itself again. This is a beautiful summation of the meditative practice. Is you letting things be themselves. We're releasing the burden we project upon other people, our experience, and ourselves. And what rises in place of that is the direct connection with it. It's actually what's here right now. And you find that there's a growing sense of intimacy, a growing sense of connection with life and with yourself. So these three aspects of steady attention, you're learning to come back again and again, with lots of patience, without self-judgment, learn to meet whatever you're noticing, whether it's a breath or a sound, something more elaborate like a political mindstorm or a sense of wanting a certain mind state. Noticing all that without a quality of judgment, the sense of non-resistance. And then releasing the story, the thought, to learn, okay, what's the actual experience versus my ideas around? This is the practice, and this is what we'll explore these weeks together. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle.